I'm Coach Seb, and this is Running New Mexico. My guest today is Peter Olson, endurance runner and co-creator of Endurance Santa Fe, bringing ultra and trail races to northern New Mexico. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Seb. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. My first question is, how did you get into running?
Well, I've kind of been running pretty much my whole life, but my junior high years, my family moved to Ethiopia, so I lived in Ethiopia in the mid-70s, and that was right at the end of the Abiba Bikila movement, the barefoot marathon runner from Ethiopia, and so running was a huge thing in Ethiopia at the time. Everybody did it, and it's kind of where I got the idea that running was cool, and that was a long time ago, but I've been running pretty much ever since. Moved back to the United States for high school, where I ran cross country and track and skied on the cross country ski team in Minnesota. And so that's where I really got addicted to endurance activities.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. When you look back at that time in Ethiopia, do you feel like you picked up a lot about running, or is it just mostly the love of the sport?
I think it was mostly just the love. It was something that you just did. It wasn't like, you know, we didn't put on special clothes or special shoes because, you know, my friends, Ethiopian friends, didn't have anything other than what they were wearing in most cases, you know, whatever shoes or not shoes they had on their feet. And we didn't like say, hey, let's go for a run today. We just ran everywhere. I mean, that was our mode of transportation. You know, it was a lifestyle rather than an activity, which kind of formed my love for the activity. Because, you know, right now I don't run with a watch. I just go out and run, and, you know, I kind of keep track of my miles, but I just like to go out and do it.
I think that can be really freeing sometimes when, you know, I talk to my runners and there's a lot of, oh, well, I saw this workout on Strava and this person was doing that. And I think that can be a bit overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And you know, my philosophy now for running is, you know, and one of the reasons why I put on ultramarathons and other races is I want people just to get out there and enjoy themselves. So one of the projects I'm working on right now, I actually started January 1st in Santa Fe, I'm running every single arroyo, which is not someplace most people actually look to run, because who wants to run in ankle-deep sand uphill? But it's been a very interesting project. I met Ricky Gates, who you may know is a professional runner, ran across the United States a couple years ago. His book just came out. He's also done a project in San Francisco called Every Single Street, so that's why I call it Every Single Arroyo. He just moved to Santa Fe. He came over to my house one day, and we talked, and I was so inspired by his just enthusiasm for running. I mean, running 3,700 miles across the United States is a big feat, and running, you know, 1,500 or whatever it was, 3,000 miles in San Francisco on the street is phenomenal. So it was kind of inspiring. And that's why I'm doing this arroyo thing, because I think that's, everybody lives by an arroyo in Santa Fe. There's arroyos everywhere. And it's one of the things you can just get out and run, explore new places, try new things. And that's what I want people to do, is explore not only our landscape, but their inner landscape as well. You know, what can they do? What are they capable of? If you can accomplish this feat, what can you do with the rest of your life?
I feel that's really motivating in itself, and it's such an amazing idea. I was looking at the map on the Endurance Santa Fe website and seeing what you've done so far, and it makes me want to go out and find an Arroyo and run it.
Yeah, I think on that map you'll see there's a little over 100 miles of Arroyos that have been run so far, and you know, some friends and other people are doing it and joining me on some runs, and but they're now people are like, hey, can you send me that map? I want to follow it. I want to find this Arroyo. We went out this, you know, the other day and we're trying to find a way through here. How do you do that? And that's exactly what I want. That's the kind of feedback. You know, I want people to go out and explore and enjoy their own abilities to run and find places. It's really fun. And, you know, you talked about Endurance Santa Fe Mountain Race, which is Labor Day weekend, and that's a huge race. We have a 50-mile, 50K, and a 13-mile, plus an uphill mile, straight uphill. And those, you know, the 50-mile, 50K races are the hardest in New Mexico by far, and, you know, some of the hardest anywhere. In fact, our 50-mile race has more vertical climbing than the Leadville 100 does, and it's, you know, only half as long. So that should tell you that it, you know, it's pretty tough. And if you can accomplish that 50-mile course in 18 hours or less, you should be very proud of your accomplishment. And that's, you know, I stand at the finish line and greet everybody that comes across, and I hear two things. I was cursing your name for the last 10 miles, and thank you so much. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff I like to hear. You know, they dug deep. They went to the bottom of their reserves and came out on top. It came out a winner.
Right. And I participated in that last August, and as part of a relay on the 50 miler. And I had the third leg, which I believe had the most elevation gain at one point. And it's the first time I've ever done anything like that. And I finished it and was just dead. I couldn't form thoughts. I could barely sit up straight. And the next day I got up and did a little 2 mile shakeout and was already thinking, well, all right, if I do it next year, this is what I got to do. And this is how I got to fix this, because I don't want to feel like that again. Yeah. Even though the whole way I was saying to myself, I am never doing this again.
Yeah. 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 It didn't take you very long to figure out how to do it again, did it?
No.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And going back to your run every Arroyo, I think the idea now especially is such a great idea, because there are so many people trying to get out. You're stuck at home or stuck in certain areas. And so just that idea of, like, you don't have to go on those same streets. You don't have to go on those same paths. We have so many open spots, not just in Santa Fe, but throughout the whole state, that you can just find a little trail and go.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I try and find places where there aren't other people. And if you go to the same trails, there's going to be a ton of people. And I get so anxious when I see other people on the trail. You know, I step off the trail 10, 20 feet. And so what I try and do is to avoid that anxiety. I run in the Arroyos, or I've been out on the Caja del Rio Plateau, south and west of Santa Fe. And that is just a treasure trove of new places to explore, too. Trails through the river. It's really rugged. It's very remote. There's no people out there. So I really look for the places now. I'm looking for places where there aren't any other people. And the Arroyos are a really good spot, right in the middle of town. You could run in what feels like a, you know, a wilderness area. Can't hear any traffic, can't see any other people. But, you know, if you pop up the bank and look around a little bit, you'll see other houses and things. And it's really nice to be able to get away like that.
And the places that you've shown on Instagram, the pictures that you've taken and I know not all of them are just arroyos, but up in the mountains and stuff, it's just the views are amazing as well.
Yeah. The Caja del Rio borders on the Rio Grande, and so there's a huge escarpment there that you can look down on the river, and there's a few trails through the cliff bands that you can get down to the river, and it's spectacular. Not many people go there, so you'll see things. There's wild horses out there, there's all kinds of other wildlife and birds, and it's a great way to just get out, explore. You feel like you've had an adventure when you've done a run out there.
So the trail running and doing this exploring, it seems like it stems back from kind of those formative years when you were in Ethiopia and just kind of exploring with your friends.
Right. Yeah. I've always loved trails. I've never liked to run on the roads. I love running through the woods, whatever the woods look like. I ran in high school, as I said, and then I went to college and I was on the ski team for a while, and I met a guy who I thought was the coolest guy I've ever met in my life. He ran this crazy race in the springtime, and I went to school in northern Minnesota on the western tip of Lake Superior, and the town was built on a hillside, 600 feet of elevation gain from the river up to the top, and there's all kinds of creeks and rivers that flowed through right through the middle of town, like the arroyos we have here. But he did a race where he would kind of zigzag down one creek, up another one, down and the next one. And, you know, the water was cold. It was snow melt, and so it was freezing cold. He called it a jungle run, and it was like nothing I'd ever done before. It was crazy. It was, you know, you're rock hopping, you're climbing through, swimming through water, climbing over trees. And this guy showed me that this is what you do for fun. And so that's kind of been the basis of my, you know, since that time in the 80s when I, you know, did these, I did my first race in Duluth in mid 80s. Lots of people ran it. I called it the direct method. And it was 8 kilometer race on and off trails through this little parkland that we had. And I was hooked after that.
Well, that's awesome. It sounds like you were kind of right there in the beginnings of some of these trail races and then kind of getting into the ultras.
Yeah.
And what got you into ultras and going into that longer distance?
Well, like I said, you know, I had been a cross country ski racer in high school, and that's where I started to do some of the longer ski races, like the Birkebeiner in Wisconsin is a really famous 50 kilometer ski race, and there's some other longer 100 kilometers cross country ski races. And so I started to do those, and I started to do pretty well as a young kid. It's like, hey, I can do this. This is fun. I like this. And so that kind of expanded. I started riding my bike long distances. I was a bike racer for a while, got into mountain bike racing, did some 24-hour mountain bike races, some 12-hour mountain bike races, and realized that the endurance and ultra endurance kind of activities really suited my physical abilities. I'm not very fast, but I can go for a long time. That's what really started it. And then about 5 years ago, I was working on my roof at my house one November and trying to get it done before the snow came. I had a leak. I was fixing it, and I was standing on a ladder, leaned up against the house, and the ladder fell, and I went with it, and my right foot got tangled up in the ladder, ended up underneath the ladder, and the rest of my body landed on top and broke my ankle pretty severely. I mean, I could see it was bent the wrong way when I landed. It was the worst pain of my life. Anyway, all the doctors, I had surgery pretty much right away. All the doctors, everybody said I'd never run again. And I had been talking about putting on a race, and I thought, okay, well, this is the time to do it now. I can't run. So let's put on a race. Let's share some of this passion with other people. And remember, January 1st, we walked into the Skier Services building at Ski Santa Fe. I was on crutches, and I said, "Hey, we're interested in putting on a race here. Are you guys interested?" And the lady's eyes got big, and she said, "I don't believe it. We were just talking about doing this just today. This is amazing. Yes, we are interested. We want to do this. Let's do it." And so that was the beginning of our partnership with Ski Santa Fe and the beginning of Endurance Santa Fe Mountain Races. And we've had a really great relationship with Ski Santa Fe ever since. They're so excited to have the race. They've been so supportive. And I don't know if you know about some of the facilities at the start-finish lines of ultramarathons, because they're usually way out in the middle of nowhere, and it's a dusty parking lot with a porta-potty or something. And we have the best restrooms in ultra racing, I think. We've got the ski lodge open, and so we've got all those facilities. So people are really happy that we have really good restrooms. That's pretty important.
Well, like I said, I did the one just last August, and that was my first experience with it. My cousin who got me into it, he's had more experiences, but it was pretty neat, not only at the base camp with, being able to go into the ski lodge and all that, but through some of the campsites that you go through, and there were the Forest Service, restrooms there that were nicer than just the trees.
Yep. Yeah. We've had a really good partnership with the Forest Service too. Some of the trails that you ran on weren't in their inventory, but they saw the benefit of those trails, so they're adding them to their inventory, so they'll become official trails and maintained by people. So a lot of really good stuff has come from that race. Lots of people have been running it, and lots of good trails are coming from it. We do a lot of trail work in the summertime too, to maintain those trails. I'm a volunteer crew leader for the Forest Service. I'm also a sawyer, so when there's downed trees, we go out with chainsaws and have special permission from the Forest Service to open up the trails and clear all the dead trees. So we do a lot of work on the trails too, to make sure that they're runnable and usable for everybody, not just runners, but mountain bikers and hikers and everybody that wants to use the trails. So I think it's a really good partnership that we have, making trails accessible. And it's part of my mission statement, is to make it accessible for everybody, give everybody a chance to get out there and enjoy it. Because I think happy people are better than cranky people. And if you're happy on the trail, you're going to be better person overall.
Right. And I liked in the newsletter, the emails you were sending out to the people running the race, talking about that sustainability and making sure that, we're not leaving trash, food, peels or anything on the trail, because other people are going to be going through, and we want to keep it clean for everybody.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I've, expanded from that Labor Day race. We've added a few other races, and right now we don't know if they're, if it's going to happen or not due to the coronavirus situation. But I think other trail race opportunities are out there. And I think that the more options we offer people, the more likely people are going to be into trail running and enjoy that. When we can, we have group runs. It used to be Monday evenings. We would get together and have group runs. Also have other kinds of races. Like I do at least one or two free races. I call them fat asses. My favorite one is in February. It's the Saturday right before the full moon in February. We do it at night. Starts about 15 minutes before sunset. And it's an 8-mile run on steep and icy trails. And only crazy, foolish people do that. But it's a lot of fun. This last February, it was one of the super moons, and it was fantastic. It was huge. It was so bright. You didn't even need a headlight in most cases. You could see the trail easily with just the moonlight, and it was fantastic. The sunset was amazing. The moonrise was even bigger and better than ever. People came back, even though it was cold, 25 degrees or something, people came back. It's like, oh, that was the best run I've ever had. And it's like, that's exactly what I want to hear. I want to hear people having fun beyond what they think is their normal limit. And that's what I'm all about, pushing their personal limits. You experienced that on your big run.
I did. And I think there's something just, I don't know how to explain it, but running at night, there's just something, I guess primal about it that just feels amazing.
Yeah. And when you're running with a headlamp, you're totally focused on what you can see, that little cone of light right in front of you. There's nothing else. Nothing exists except what's right in front of you. And it really helps you focus on, you know, that and whatever else is going through your head. But you got to be aware because, you know, the footing is difficult. But I like night running too.
Yeah. Going back when you had broke your ankle and started this Endurance Santa Fe and race directing, did you have an idea in your head that was something you wanted to do, was create a race?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I've been talking about it for, you know, I did my first race in the 80s, a running race. I did some mountain bike races and some series of races, and then I kind of got out of it for a couple decades. But then I started thinking, you know, there's no big trail race in Santa Fe, and we have such fantastic infrastructure here. We need to have one. So that's kind of what my motivation was, is we got to have a race here and let's do it.
And why do you think that is, that there wasn't? Because in New Mexico in general, the we may not have all the facilities that Santa Fe has in every spot, but the amount of elevation, the trails, the places that we can go are just so numerous.
Yeah. I think that in particular, for a long time, trail running in Santa Fe was kind of a individual thing. Everybody, you know, the people that were trail runners kind of stayed to themselves. There were a few, you know, ad hoc races around. There's some, you know, big famous races like the Jemez Mountain Race in Los Alamos in May, and, you know, some other big races, Cloudcroft and Las Cruces, and places like that have good races. There's La Luz, which has been running, you know, for a long time. So there are some races around, but I think it was in Santa Fe in particular, I think most of the runners here were kind of stayed to themselves and never really expanded too much. Nobody took the effort maybe to put on a big event. It is a lot of work. It is hard. I have a full-time job besides doing race directing, and so, you know, I have to take a whole week off before Endurance Santa Fe just to, you know, get everything done. So I got to save up my vacation days to do that, put on a race to work. But it's worth it.
No, I think the culture, the people that I met at the race were just, and runners in general, I think, get along well together, are happy people. They're competitive within the race, but they want to help each other out. But during this ultra, it was a whole different world.
Yeah.
I was walking and just dying, and I had, you know, a handful of people who would catch up to me, and they'd offer me water or gummies or gels, whatever they had with them, and walk with me a little bit. Are you okay? And it just a different feeling than you would get in a normal road race. And I know partially because in a road race, you know, there's only another few miles before you get to the end, or a mile or whatever, and it's not going to be a you know, 500 foot climb or more.
Or 2000.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think there, you are exactly right. There is a difference between the road running culture and the trail running culture. And there's a little overlap, you know, some of the people, but generally trail runners are that kind of person that you just described. They're willing to help. They're competitive. They need to get out there and go fast, but they're also know that we're all in this together. And if I can help you a little bit, I'm going to do that. And it's a really supportive, very tight trail running group. I've made a lot of friends over the last few years that are really close and helpful. And, you know, if I need help with anything, I'll just call on my trail running friends and they're always willing to help. So you're right. It is kind of a little bit different atmosphere, and trail runners are a little bit different breed. First of all, they want to go out and do that kind of suffering. And second of all, they're willing to help somebody suffer along with them.
Absolutely. When you take that week off, you know, getting everything set up for this race, what goes into that? I mean, while going through it, there was markers and flags tied. I mean, how much time are you spending on those trails daily in that week?
We have to go out. And, you know, some of those far reaches, like the section of trail that you ran is far away from any other trail section. So that's way out there. We have to get that. We've got, you know, way more than 50 miles of trails to mark because it's a big loop. It's not just, you know, multiple little loops. So the 50-mile course is a big loop that we have to get every bit of it. Every intersection, every junction, then there's the 50K, which, you know, is 30 miles, 31 miles. And there's a little overlap with the 50K and the 50 mile, but there are some sections that are just solely 50K race directions. So we got to do those separately. And I probably do, I'm guessing 20 or 30 hours of trail time to mark the course. And, you know, if you add in the other people, maybe it's 50 hours of man hours to mark the course and to make sure it's all good. And unfortunately, we have some people that, some vandals that actually take down or remark or move or, you know, destroy the trail markings that we put up. So we have to do it as close to race day as possible so that they last, you know, people don't. So we can't set them up, you know, a week or two before and then hope they're all there. So we have to set it up in the day or two beforehand, and it gets hectic to do that. One of the things that we do now with the racers is we give them a map that they can download into an app like Avenza or something that actually follow the course on their smartphone, and you can see the little blue dot following the trail. And if you get off course, you can see, oh no, I have to turn around and go back. So that's helped some keep people on track. But we've had a big problem with vandalism and people moving the flagging. So flagging the trail is a big thing. We have to get all the bibs ordered and, you know, put in the right order and have people pick up their packets and get all the t-shirts together, make sure all the aid station gear is together and the captains have all their volunteers, and we get the food and beverages. Tailwind has been a big sponsor for the last couple of years, and so we have Tailwind electrolyte drink that we have to get together. I think there's 6 or 7 aid stations that we have to get the gear ready for and get people out there and get all the volunteers together. So it takes quite a lot of time.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And you talk about the food. That was something that, again, surprised me. At the end of a 5K, 10K, you know, there's always bananas, oranges, you know, things like that, maybe some gels. But going through these aid stations, and there were, I mean, I think one of them had breakfast burritos. There was candy, fruit of all kinds, pickles, and I couldn't believe it.
Bacon sandwiches and avocado toast. Yeah, well, when you're running that far, you need to have some real food. And I heard from a guy from Colorado who came down to do the race, and he said, "Oh, I love coming to New Mexico races because the aid station food is so good. It's better than what I eat on a regular basis at home." So he loves to come to New Mexico races just for the aid station food. So that, you know, we try and make sure that people get what they want. And, you know, I have to give a lot of credit to the aid station captains, because I give them, you know, some money to buy food, or, you know, we buy food for them, but they really are the creative ones when it comes to, you know, because they're runners themselves, they know what they like, they know what they need out there on the course, and they plan, okay, we're towards the end of the race, so this is, you know, they're people, 50 milers, their stomachs aren't going to be that able to handle too much heavier stuff, so we'll give them these lighter things or these things that they need, electrolyte replacements, pickle juice, whatever it is, that so they can anticipate the needs of the runners out there. It's really amazing what those aid station captains can do for us.
No, they were all amazing and helpful. As runners were coming in, as I was coming in, different runners, and just drained and dead, it didn't matter if you were doing the relay or if you were doing the full thing, they were right there to help you, make sure you were set, and it was amazing. And so how do you find these people? How do you get them to help volunteer?
I can be pretty persuasive. They're, you know, a lot of the guys and women, men and women that are doing these aid stations have become my friends over the years. And so I meet them at races, or people, you know, sometimes they need to do volunteer work to get into other races. So they volunteer to do aid station work. There's a lot of people that just like to be a part of something, and they can't run anymore, so they want to volunteer and they want to help out. That takes a lot of work too, is to find those phenomenal people and to, you know, to get them out to help. And so it's a lot of emails, a lot of contact with people face to face, going to races. Hey, we're doing this race, you want to help out? And I do have a pretty good working relationship with other race directors around. So, you know, when you get a good volunteer, you don't want to hoard that person. You want to share and say, hey, why don't you contact this person? They might be able to help you. And I've done the timing for Cedro Peak, which is in April generally, for the last several years, helping out Kim King, who's the race director for that. And so, you know, we all kind of share around and help each other out. And it's competitive, but we don't compete against each other. We try and help each other out. I mean, because it all adds, you know, to the whole experience of trail running. I'll help her in April, and she'll help me in September. And so I think that's, you know, you talked about that cooperative nature of trail runners, and that exemplifies it there, you know, helping each other out.
It's just, it's a nice culture. It's just nice to see. It was nice to be around. And it, like I said, even though I was dying, I think that culture of it helped me want to be a part of it again at some point.
Yeah. And the thing is, everybody's dying out there. Everybody at some level, sometimes it was 20 minutes ago and they're feeling better now. And it's like, oh, good, I can be helpful to this guy, or I'm going to die in another 10 minutes. I know it. So I'll be helpful here in case I need help later. Everybody's dying at some point.
Yeah, I'd seen on, I believe it was Ultra Sign Up, you were able to do a couple of little races in January and February before everything kind of got shut down.
Yeah.
Do you fortunate that you were able to get some time out in some races before this?
Yeah, I don't really plan on, you know, big races or doing them myself anymore, because I don't always have the time to train or to be in as fit as I'd like to be. But so when there are races, I like to get them going. I helped my friend who did the Galisteo Basin races, which was, you know, December, January, and February, one race a month at Galisteo Basin. And I was able to run those, which was really fun. She did a great job. I was able to do the put on the Frozen Feb Fat Ass, which was the nighttime run in February. And so I do like to run races. It does motivate me. Like I said, I'm not fast anymore, but I don't need to stop very much. One of the things that I really discovered I enjoy, a friend of mine, Dan Magdalena from Jemez Pueblo, ran the Leadville 100 last year. Well, he ran it the last 2 years. And the first year he ran it, he missed the cutoff at the 50-mile turnaround by like 13 minutes or something. So he wasn't able to continue. And I was going to run with him back, do the second 50 with him and pace him. When he didn't make the cutoff, I told him that he had to do it again next year so I could run with him, because I really wanted to. And he said, okay, I'll train better. He did. He came back last year, second year, and he had a much better training schedule. He was on pace. He had his whole race dialed in down to the minute, how long he was spending in aid stations. And so I did meet him at the halfway point, turned around and ran back. I did 40 of the last 50 miles with him. And that was so fun for me. I was participating in the race, but I didn't have the pressure of racing. I was there to help my friend and keep him moving, keep him motivated, keep him on track. We were watching the watch and making sure that he was going to get to the finish line in time to earn his buckle. And that, to me, was really fun. I enjoyed pacing on that section, you know, the last half of the race, basically, with him. That was really fun.
That's cool. That sounds like fun. I was scheduled to do one with my cousin in, I think, June or July out in Angel Fire.
Yeah.
And I was going to do a 20-mile loop with him to help kind of keep him going. And so far we haven't heard much about that, but
yeah,
that would be just different for me.
Yeah. It's a really fun experience. You're there. You gotta be fit too, to keep moving. You gotta be a little more, you know, I didn't have to do the first 50 miles. So I was a little fresher and I was able to keep him going and keep him motivated and keep him on track, on pace. And it was really an enjoyable experience. It's tough too. I mean, 4 o'clock in the morning, we were running down this gravel road in the middle of nowhere. It was pitch black. Smooth trail, so we were kind of like, it was easy going, and we both started kind of weaving and wobbling, and we realized that we're both falling asleep on our feet. But we snapped out of it when we got back on single track, and we were able to finish. He got his buckle. He got under 29 hours, which was an amazing feat. It was awesome.
Well, and I want to go back a second. You said when you broke your ankle, the doctors had told you that you weren't going to be able to run again. And here you are.
Yeah.
Just last year did a 50 miler.
Yeah.
What was that experience like coming back and being able to kind of prove them wrong, I guess?
Well, I had 2 surgeries on my right ankle. I have 9 screws and a plate in my right foot. So I'm all screwed back together, but I still, you know, it's not 100% functional. I have some tendon issues, especially with my toes, and it was really painful. I couldn't run more than 3 or 4 miles for almost a year after surgery, and I did lots of physical therapy, and a friend of mine at Core Physio, Frank Hatch, Dr. Frank Hatch, really worked on my ankle a lot, spent a lot of time, many hours helping me, you know, get things back moving again in the right way. And like you said, last year I ran rim to rim to rim in the Grand Canyon, 50 miles or so. And so I was able to keep going. I still have some problems with my toes, but, and, you know, I think this is a big reason why I'm not very fast anymore, but I can run those distances now. I can keep going. I worked at it really a lot. I mean, it was something that was so important to me that I spent a lot of time working, a lot of agony, a lot of tears, a lot of pain. I ran 2 years ago the Caballo Blanco Ultra in Mexico, down in the bottom of Copper Canyon with the Tarahumara, and I had a really painful experience. The first, I don't know, I guess it was the first 30 or so kilometers of the 42 or 45 kilometers that I ran were just so painful. I took some kind of weird Mexican painkiller. I mean, they had the Red Cross out there, and I said, I need some pain and pain pills. And they gave me something that was some kind of anti-inflammatory and something that helped. And then I changed shoes and was able to finish. But it took a lot of work, a lot of pain. And I'm pretty much able to do pretty much anything I need to now. Got the right shoes, figured out what my toes needed. And so it was this, you know, 5-year process, 3 or 4 years of pain, and now I can go out and run like the wind.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, that's very motivating for people who go through injuries to hear it's not easy, but you can get through it.
Yeah, it's possible. With the right mindset and determination, a little work, a little pain, you can do it.
So here in a couple of weeks, you were supposed to put on a Ghost Ranch race, a race at Ghost Ranch.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's being pushed back or canceled because of the stay-at-home orders.
Yeah, we postponed that till October 11th. So that'll be... we've got a marathon, half marathon, a 5 and a 10K, and we're going to run them all on Sunday, October 11th at Ghost Ranch. And that will be, I think that'll be a very beautiful race. They have so much property out there that it'll all be on private property, Ghost Ranch property, start and finish at the retreat center. Really good facilities there. People can stay overnight. There's camping. We're going to have a party in the evening and bonfire. And then the race itself will be a lot of two track, which I call parallel single track. But there'll also be some really interesting single track sections through a couple of canyons and right along the Abiquiú Lake or along the Rio Chama. And then up on top of the Mesa, big sweeping views of the Red Rock Cliffs that, you know, Georgia O'Keeffe made famous. I think that's going to be a really fun race for a lot of people. And not a lot of climbing, 2,000 feet, I think. You're 3,000 feet for the marathon. So it's not going to be terribly difficult. There'll be a lot of fun, fast running for people. But the scenery will be spectacular.
The scenery is what caught my attention.
Yeah.
And so how did this come about?
Oh, it was another one of those serendipitous things. We talked to somebody who wanted to do a swimming race up there, and she wanted to use the Ghost Ranch access point on Abiquiú because they have property that borders the lake, or go, you know, the lakefront is their property line. And so she went up there. We went with her to talk to them about doing a swimming race, which they weren't too interested, but they were looking to expand their outdoor activities program. And they were trying to decide, you know, do we do this internally or do we have some outside contractors? So when we showed up, they said, oh, this is perfect. We can see if this will work. Well, you know, outside contractors to come in and put this race on. We'll be a big participant. We'll be total support of this race, and which they have been. And, you know, so for them, it's a win. For us, it's a win because we get to run in this place where not many people get to go on the property. And so it was one of those right time, right place, right chemistry. So I've been talking to them a lot. We're going to build a couple, few miles of new trails for them that they'll be able to use in their programs. And so I think that's going to be another fun race too.
Yeah, I like I said, it just, the description of it and everything, I know I was excited for it. And I'm now that I know it's in October, I'm definitely going to put it on my list of to look into at that point.
Yeah.
You know, you talked about being at a different point in your running career where you're not as fast as you used to, but you can run again and you're happy about that. So when you do join these races that you're participating in, what's going through your head at the start when you're on that starting line?
I used to get butterflies really bad, you know, every race. Starting in high school, I couldn't sleep at night. Ski races, I couldn't sleep. I got to do well. But the last couple of years, my attitude is a lot more relaxed. I don't get nervous about it. I just go and I'm just going to enjoy the experience. I'm going to try my best to go as fast as I can, but I'm not going to be too worried about, you know, what my race time is, or because I keep reminding myself, I'm going to be 59 years old in September, and it's pretty old for a guy who's running 50 miles, but I don't feel 59 or 58 at the moment. So I go out and I just, you know, I kind of do my best and work my hardest, and my biggest competition is myself. Although if I see somebody ahead of me, I do try and catch them. And if somebody's coming up behind me, I do try and stay away. But I'm not too worked up about it. I don't get too caught up in my pace or what my time is. I'm happy if I can do a fast time. But I'm happy to be running. I think my ankle rehab really taught me that enjoy what you have right now at the moment. Enjoy what you're able to do, because you may not be able to do it again. So I'm not worried. My identity isn't wrapped up in my pace. I like to go out and run, and maybe that's, I don't know. I just like to go out and run, and I do like to do well if I can. I do like to beat somebody who has beat me in the past. I am competitive, but I don't get too worked up about it.
What brought you to New Mexico?
Well, my brother moved here in the 80s. I came to visit him one Christmas time, and it was the worst snow year ever, 1990, I think. Piles of snow everywhere and cold. And I thought to myself, this is amazing. I gotta move here. This is fantastic. Look at all this snow, these mountains. This is great. And I was working for a TV station at the time in Minnesota. And the same parent company happened to own KOB TV. So I put in for a transfer. And 9 months later, I moved here, September 91. And I've been here ever since. So I came to visit my brother, got a job, and moved here, and here I am.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. What do you consider your biggest success with or around running?
Ooh, well, first of all, that I can still run right now, and I could get up and go out and do 15 miles easy. Right now, I could do that. So that's a big success for me right now. I feel that the friends I've made running and has been a success. I think that the races that I put on, that people enjoy, I think those are successes too. I have had some personal success with running races. I've never won big races, but I've been, you know, I did well in age group categories for myself. I was pretty high in the age grouping. I felt good about that. So success, I think my biggest success that I feel right now is that I'm able to run after my broken ankle and the rehab. And for me, the fact that I can go out and go for a run, take my dogs and go for 3 or 4 hours and enjoy myself immensely, is that's a success.
Yeah. And was that your biggest disappointment or struggle, was when you had your broken ankle and weren't able to?
I tried not to think about being disappointed. I tried to have a positive attitude. I tried to think about, okay, I got to just, you know, I got to spend a little time recuperating, rehabbing. I have to put in this time now, but I'm not ever going to think that I'm not going to run again. Because I am. I'm going to run again. I'm going to get through this. It's going to take some time, but I am going to be able to do this. And so I tried not to be disappointed that I had a broken ankle, that I was on crutches. I tried to think of a positive thing to do. A friend of mine lent me one of those knee scooter things where you kneel on a bench. And so I did 3 or 4 miles a day on a knee scooter, pushing with my left leg and my right leg up on the knee scooter on the rail trail. And so I found other things to do once I was able to move around a little bit. Running on crutches is not recommended. And once I was able to get, you know, a little bit of movement, I was able to ride my bike. And so little steps, tiny goals, I reach a goal and you know, adjust my trajectory and keep working at it and not ever getting, I mean, I was sad. I had some depression about that, but I didn't dwell on it.
Well, it kind of sounds like what you have to do for an ultra. You have a long way to go. So you kind of can't dwell on the negatives yet, because you got to get to that next aid station.
It's not over at the bottom of this hill. You still got to get to the top. You still got to do it yourself.
And so you've touched on this, I think, a few times throughout this conversation, but what keeps you motivated?
I think I just, right now, I need to be, you know, it's a time full of anxiety. And one of the things I do to relieve that anxiety in myself is to go for a run, physically release that tension. And so that's a motivator. My longtime running buddy, my husky, died about a month ago. She ran with me all the time. So I adopted another dog. So now I have two border collies and they need to go for a run. They can sense when it's time to run and, you know, if I'm getting down or whatever. So taking my dogs out for a run is a motivator for me, a big motivator. But just the fact that I can go and enjoy a little space, an open space where there aren't any people, and get away from, you know, this time of anxiety, release that. That's a big motivator. I like to run. I like to be fit. I like to get to the fitness level where you can just cruise along at a nice pace and not breathe and let your mind wander and think about all the thoughts you need to think about and solve all the problems you have in your life by running. And once you get to that fitness, that level of fitness, it's that makes it easier to go and motivate, you know. Let's go for a run now.
And what keeps you excited about this sport?
Excited. Well, I like, there was a guy, one of the first years I did endurance Santa Fe Mountain races. He came from New York City and he was turning 50. So he wanted to do a 50K race. And so he flew out from New York. He was a member of the New York City Roadrunners Club. And, you know, he thought he was pretty fit. He'd been doing a lot of stuff. And he was the first guy that cussed me out for the last 10 miles uphill running. And he when he crossed the line, he told me, it's like, all right, I've been cursing your name for the last half an hour, but thank you so much. It was the best thing I've ever done in my life. It's going to carry me through. And I still, it's been 3 or 4 years, and I still hear from him every once in a while. He'll send me an email. It's like, dude, I just did this run, or I just did that, or I was able to, you know, I couldn't finish this project at work, but then I thought about what I did at the 50K race, at your race, and I buckled down and I was able to do it. And, you know, for me, that's exciting to know that I had that kind of impact on somebody's life, positive impact, and to change that. So for me, that's why I keep putting on races to, you know, to have that experience, to hear that from people and see what they can do.
I think that's a great way to stay excited. My last question is, what's your go-to song to get motivated, get you moving?
Oh, I don't know if I have one particular song. But I do, if I'm going to the trailhead, if I have to drive to a trailhead and I'm getting psyched up, I do blast electronica. I like electronic dance music and, you know, something with a big heavy beat and electronic sounds. And so I do crank that pretty much.
Well, that's all the questions I have for you today. Thank you for joining me. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Thank you, Seb. It's been a pleasure to talk with you, and thank you for letting me ramble on a little bit. I'll see you on the trails.
Thank you for taking the time to join me today. If you can, please rate and review, but most importantly, spread the word so we can grow this community. If you know of any runners that deserve a shout out or should be interviewed, or you just want to share your runs and connect with other people, use the hashtag RunningNM on Twitter and Instagram. You can also follow me at RunningNM on both these platforms. If you prefer to reach out by email, you can find me at runningnewmexico@gmail.com. Music was provided by Philip Friedman. You can follow him on SoundCloud under DJ Teach. And until next time, keep running, New Mexico.